Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 222. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Burner Passports, or it's a whole lot of words that I don't know.
Okay. I'm not even going to ask.
Kenny mentioned that earlier before we pushed record.
I was reading a website that was not in my language. And I said, wow, it's a whole lot of words that I don't know.
All right. Yeah.
You know what? There's probably more words that I don't know than I do know.
I think that's true, Kenny. While you're pretty smart.
Do you mean in English or like worldwide?
According to standardized tests, I'm very average.
I feel like in English, I know more words than average. And according to standardized tests, which for whatever reason I was used to be really good at, I'm like kind of smart, actually. You would know it now.
Can we audit that? I don't know.
I can give you my GRE score if I don't know. I don't even remember it, but it was good.
Your GED score? You passed?
No. Not the GRE.
I'm not impressed. I know what it is. I'm joking.
All right. Well, what have we been up to this week?
I'm going to work backwards in chronological order because it's more exciting. So I rode the trainer today and I deserve a medal. Instead, I got bacon potatoes.
Was that the most exciting thing that you've done?
I have to interject since Matt said bacon and potatoes the other morning. So Matt hits his like snooze button on his alarm several times before he wakes up.
And I have a good reason for that. I think I can explain it.
I know. But I'm just saying like he wanted me to make sure that he got out of bed. And so I had already cooked breakfast, which was like hash browns with some bacon cooked in there. And like the second time he hit his snooze button, I just yelled up the stairs. I'm like, hey, just so you know, every time you hit the snooze button, I'm going to eat some of the bacon out of your potatoes.
Damn.
And then the next time my alarm goes off, she goes, oh shit, Daisy, it's bacon time.
And I ate a couple of pieces of...
And I yelled downstairs, you cunt.
Okay, so it worked, though. You were saying something about chronological order of excitement, and then I'm wondering, I couldn't tell if you were working forwards or backwards on the level of excitement. You said the trainer, and I was just making sure that was not the most exciting thing that you've done, or I was going to be, you know, a little bummed out.
I'm going to work backwards because it's kind of like your parents giving you your PS5 first on Christmas, and then you open your socks last, and you're like, who gives a fuck about socks? But if you open the socks first... And we did this once with my mom. We fucked up and we gave her the good present first because it was impossible to wrap. And turns out we should have given her that last because it, yeah. Actually, I'm going to talk about my mom because she's pretty cool. So once for Christmas, my dad and I she bought a Jeep Cherokee new. And I don't know, at some point it didn't come with a CD player and the radio wasn't that good and whatnot. And for Christmas, we put a new like head unit in her Jeep and it was a CD player and whatnot. And my dad's a really smart dude. And he was like, this is what we're going to do. And it was of the era where the faceplate of your CD CD player was removable. So he found like a little cardboard box that fit in that kind of looked like a necklace box. And then he bought this really chintzy cheap little bracelet and he had her unwrap the bracelet first. And it seemed as if though there was going to be a matching necklace, but instead it was the head unit to her car, which was just, I don't know. My dad's a fucking legend.
Yeah. We should have your dad on the show sometime.
Only if he's absolutely zooted high.
Yeah.
I just wanted to
talk
about... That's
entertaining. I mean, he is entertaining all the time, but that's like super entertaining because he says stuff like, I'm higher than bird pussy.
Yeah. Anyways.
Giraffe pussy. He says that too.
Both of them. But another time for Christmas, I was dating this chick that was, she still is, a very nice artist. And we had given her some photos of my sister and I playing as children, and she did these beautiful like 18 by 24 charcoal drawings of us as kids. And because we couldn't really wrap them, we just like brought them out, but we should have done that last because my mom like boo-hooed and then she opened like the socks and bullshit and she wasn't very excited because yeah. And with all that said, my mom got me new house slippers for Christmas and I'm wearing them right now. And for those of you at home that are like, damn, this dude can't buy his own house slippers, My family's very pragmatic, and they're always like, what do you want? And I'm like, this. And a couple years ago, I got house shoes for my birthday, and now I got house shoes for Christmas. And these are the first pair, they did a bunch of at-home work. All the nice, what is that, like sheep lining?
Shearling.
Inside? Shearling lining inside was all packed out. They weren't very warm. So, but now I'm a real redneck. I've got my outside the house shoes and my inside the house shoes.
See, that's my problem. I've got house shoes and I put them on at a convenience.
And you wear them outside.
But yeah, it's like, I just need to, you know, put the trash can out or something.
Yeah,
and then I end up like, you know, walking around the block. And then I'm like, I just need to go to, you know, whatever. I don't know. I need to go to Target.
In your house
shoes.
Yeah,
and then I'm rolling through Target in my house shoes.
Like sweatpants and house shoes.
And then you're like, I need to get this freeze plug out of the head of the SV. And you're like in your house shoes still.
Yeah, yeah.
And what
I have
what
welded in them,
said?
Unfortunately. And so they have, I've got two pairs now because the first one got worn through and slash burned through. Anyway, I beat him up.
What Kenny hasn't mentioned is he's only wearing house shoes. Like,
all the time.
No. He's naked, full face helmet, house shoes, walking around the neighborhood. That keeps the property values down. Don't let your taxes go up.
Yeah, it's actually
Think
a
smart.
Pretty good idea.
There was a guy that he's moved out of Howard now, but a friend of ours who lived in Howard, and he always kept like a lot, like an old car and like just some like junk and stuff in his front yard. And he's like, yeah, I just do that. So like the property values don't go up too much. And like when people come around to like buy something for an Airbnb, they kind of get turned off by the junk in my yard.
That's good. That's smart.
It's
I
a
like
good
that.
Strategy. Like we, so like one time I was hiking around in the woods, like by a place that used to be like a campsite, but then they kind of like closed it down and made designated campsites. And I found where someone had used like an old rope to tie together some like deer bones and like an old beer can. And it's like a big bone wind chime. And like that hangs at the end of our driveway now.
So my week, because Kenny was a total asshole and asked me if that was the most exciting thing, was not new house shoes. I already got those. It was with the trainer this morning. I did a little bit of work to the old Jeep. I ordered some parts for my Nissan Frontier. I ordered some tools.
So you have three cars.
I do.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. It's a lifestyle choice. I have two motorcycles, three cars, and probably 6 to 8 bicycles. I don't even want to bother trying to count right now. It's too many.
Multiple cheap cars is way more fun than one expensive car.
I don't know. I kind of like just having one car.
Well, Kenny and I weren't talking to you, so fuck you.
All right.
On the Jeep, I'm using the Jeep as my test mule, and I took the doors off because you can just pick them up and walk away with them. It's pretty dope.
It's the doors wintertime.
Off. Yep. And I took them inside of my workshop where there was a fire built in the wood-burning stove, not just in the floor. Just want to clarify that. And I took the door cards off and tightened everything up and put a bunch of sound deadening behind the door cards and put the door cards back on and put new mirrors on and took them back out there and hung them back on the truck. So that was pretty cool.
Fancy. That's pretty cool. You have a wood-burning stove in the shop?
Yeah, dude.
That's pretty dope.
It's really dope. You can easily make it like 80, not like, I've taken a thermometer out there. You can make it 80 degrees in the shop. There can be 6 inches of snow on the ground and you're in a t-shirt with ass sweat. It's pretty dope.
Wood burning stoves are really cool. Is it like a pretty tiny one?
It's probably, yeah, it's a small one.
It's like 1 foot by 2 foot, probably. Approximately.
I mean, that's like a reasonable size one. It's crazy. Even with ultra micro wood burning stoves, you can get a cabin like nuclear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There is
Does it have like a
wonderful
clear glass front or anything fancy?
Nope, all cast iron.
All right.
There's a wonderful Cormac McCarthy short story about getting a cabin too hot with a wood-burning stove.
How do you adjust that sucker? Like what type of little dials and slidey things and flue doohickeys are on that?
It has a flue and it has a, I don't know the name of it.
It has a thing you can slide out in the front, like on the bottom.
So it's got a front slidey thing, but it's also got something in the pipe. Okay. When do you do, I'm learning about wood stove stuff. When do you do pipe stuff versus front door stuff?
Never. For me, never.
The pipe always stays open.
That's what I would figure. I just didn't know flues were a thing in like a fireplace. Like we used to have a flue in our traditional like home brick fireplace, but I just didn't know why you'd have one in a wood stove.
Well, I think the idea is it kind of helps critters not come in your house.
Okay.
In the summer.
Is it also like a draft also, thing, like if you're not running it?
Well, it's also, well, I think that's part of it. But another thing is if you had a fire, I think you can partially close the flue and fully close the draft and it'll
simmer
pretty slowly.
Okay.
Yeah, like simmer. Gotcha. Right? So when you wake up in the morning, it's not frigid. But anyways, we keep getting derailed for my week and we haven't gotten to the good part. I ordered two different kinds of drink mix based on listener.
I guess they feedback. Are kind of customers.
Let me take my pop filter off and sigh harder at my microphone.
I mean, we owe them, they pay us, and we owe them a service.
Okay. And then on Friday, I signed up for a mountain bike race.
God damn.
And that's the most exciting thing, and that's why I didn't talk about that first.
Which mountain bike race?
12 hours of Mesa Verde in Cortez, Colorado.
Jeez, that's a good idea.
I don't know if that's a good one.
Don't ride bikes for 5 years, 12-hour race.
You know, when you're laying under a car and you're trying to move something, like you're trying to get a transmission just so, and things start to get weird and you get a little scared and you get really strong, right? And then you can do it because you got that like mom strength of my toddler's under this minivan, so I'm going to roll this minivan over like an Avengers character. That's what I needed.
Nah, you'll be fine.
Yeah, see, what I did is...
Fine, you'll just go real slow.
Excuse me?
Thought I lost you there for a sec.
And I was thinking of the words to use so Andrea didn't have to bleep me in this show for the first time. Because, first of all, respectfully, go fuck yourself. Second of all, disrespectfully, go fuck yourself. Third of all, we'll see how it goes when we record like May 12th or whatever afterwards. And you say, I told you so.
No, you're going to be fine. You're going to do great. You're going to have a good time. You're going to make a lot of friends.
Actually, friends are taking me with them.
Ah.
They were actually giving me a hard time and I was noncommittal. And then I sent them a screenshot and I was like, where's yours? And they're like, holy shit. Whose team are you on? And I'm like, bitch, mine. And I'm pretty nervous, but it'll be fine. I'm going to tweak a few things between now and then, obviously.
Which bike are you going to ride?
I'm going to ride my Canyon, probably. I don't think that any bike I would want to ride more will be able to be ridden then.
What tires are you going to run?
I'm glad you asked, Kenny. I'm going to try them first. The course is supposed to be pretty buff. So don't need much tire. You know, when I did the 12-hour race in Salida.
Buff. I thought buff meant like chunky.
No, I thought buff was like.
No, buff is not chunky.
Buff is like manicured. Like it's all buffed out.
Not a lot of rocks.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like one would not have a terrible time on a hardtail is my understanding.
Okay. Just never heard that term before. I don't like it.
Well, maybe it's because you're not buff. But. I'm going to do a little homework. I'm either going to run... I have two tire sets in mind. One is a Aspen rear with a Recon front. Might be a little too much tire.
Has the Recon been discontinued?
No.
I think it has.
No, it hasn't.
No, I'm dead serious. Oh, no.
Maxxis does not discontinue tires.
They do all the time. It's ridiculous. I think there's a very popular tire that's been discontinued. The Ardent. The Ardent is gone. And I think Ardent Race as well.
The Ardent was made in like 2008. Sorry, you had an 18-year run there, buddy.
It was such a good tire.
Not compared to a Recon or a Forecaster.
By the way, the Forecaster's been through like 6 iterations. And they call it the same thing.
The Ardent went through no iterations, and they finally took it out back and shot it, okay?
It's such a good tire.
It wasn't. Ardent and Icon was good when Continental and Schwalbe were the only other options, and those just wouldn't hold air.
Yeah, yeah. I really like my Ardent front. It was a good tire.
Have you tried a Recon 2.6?
It makes an Aggressor look like a piece of shit.
An Aggressor is a rear tire. And
I'm just trying to get you guys riled up. It's a lot of fun.
You need the Aggressor Assegai combo on your fucking Knievo SL weight weenie bitch bike, not fucking Fast Track 2.2s or whatever you're running.
I'm running a Butcher T9 front and a old Purgatory rear, the one with that like shovel pattern in it that they don't make anymore. That
you
I'm really sad
can
about.
Can we just keep on moving instead of just sitting here and Kenny trolling you about tires?
No, it's great. Tire talk is great. So you're gonna run, hey,
either a Recon Aspen or the Fast Track Flex Lights.
Jeez, I don't even know what those are.
Flex Light is their new lightweight, durable XC casing.
Hmm. Man, I feel like you got to go to school to figure out all these tires.
Or just look at the vendors that you sell and check out their website. I don't know, man. Have you not built a new Epic World Cup or Epic 8 non-Evo with the fancy World Cup wheels on it and been like, damn, those Flex Light tires and this front wheel weigh nothing. That's dope.
Yeah.
I should get some of these tires because I can't afford the wheels.
Maybe. I don't build bikes anymore.
Well, I do. So,
what do you think about the Vittoria stuff? It seems to be up and coming.
No desire to run it.
All right.
I'm going to be a giant asshole right now. We know that I don't ride bikes much anymore. I'm going to have to do this. That's part of the impetus. I want to ride bikes. I want to be a fit person. I don't want to be 50 years old. I mean, I'm going to be 38 in a few weeks, which means I'm close to 50. No. I last raced my bike in 2018, and I last rode seriously when I was racing. I need that little thing on the calendar to keep myself motivated. And after what my testicle, RIP lefty, whatever you want to call it, that not the fork. I lost my left nut, for those of you that are tuning in for the first time. I just don't have any desire to do an enduro. I don't want to go do some gnarly backcountry trail. I don't want to do that stuff anymore. I just want to get out and pedal my bike. And this year I'm going to get a gravel bike again, and I'm going to get, we get shop demo bikes, like employee demos, and I'm going to get a gravel bike as my employee demo, and I'm going to do some pedally riding and kind of get, like, that's what I did when I started riding. When I started riding, I did road racing and I did endurance mountain bike events, and that's really what I used to excel at, is just pedaling a lot. So I'm going to try that again. So that's where I'm at. Yeah, I'm going to ride my Canyon and it's going to be cool.
So back to tires. It seems like Vittoria is up and coming from what I'm seeing in our little micro economy, and Continentals.
Yep.
All the new Conti stuff seems to be pretty well received.
Yep. So I can answer both of those. That's what we were going to when I got on that tangent. My shop doesn't stock Continentals. There's a limited amount of square footage, and Maxxis is really king.
What do you guys carry?
Maxxis, Vittoria, and Specialized.
Oh, you do carry Vittorias. Okay.
Yep.
Well, and it's...
And here's the thing.
We talked about it last week. Like, Maxxis, for a long time, it was just like with stands. Like, for, you know, stands made the tubeless rim for a long time. And now there are a lot of options that are like better, as good as or better than. Like, and now it's
nothing
like
is worse than a stands rim.
Yeah.
Nothing is worse than a stands rim. You could get a factory, like, I don't know, non-tubeless Specialized stout wheel from 8 years ago and set it up tubeless, and it's not supposed to be tubeless, and it's probably not going to blow off the rim. But you can get a brand new stands flow and put anything on there, and it'll explode off at 25 PSI.
Yeah. So, like, for a long time, Maxxis just like cornered the market with just good tires, like good tread patterns with good weight for the respective category and tread pattern. Not that Maxxis is bad now. They haven't gone full stance where they're just like irrelevant, but there are other companies now that are as good as Maxxis.
I feel like Maxxis might be asleep at the wheel. That's the vibe I get.
What? I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because this is, I'm going to tell you why I won't ride a Vittoria tire right now. And it's what you just said is also said in our shop. And one, I wholeheartedly disagree with it. And two, I can run a report that shows you people buy Maxxis.
Oh, I'm not saying people don't buy Maxxis. We have a giant wall of Maxxis tires.
And where I'm going is, when I hear someone tell a customer, oh yeah, Maxxis isn't really doing anything good, I'm sorry, Vittoria had to keep releasing new tires because they weren't that good yet. And guess what? The Maxxis tires were already good. I mean, you just said the Ardent was your favorite tire, and that tire is
I like Maxxis stuff in general. I think very rarely do they just fully swing and a miss on a tire, for the most part. but I just feel like they might be a tiny bit asleep at the wheel. I think there's more modern rubber compounds. There's more modern tread designs. I just think a lot of other people are innovating a little bit more than Max.
Do you need to innovate when you're already industry leading is my question. Everyone has been playing catch up to Maxxis for the last decade. Sorry, we have Aggressor through Aspen ST. What more do you like? They don't make a, they, there's not a hole in their lineup that they need to fill.
By the way, I'd like to get the full, we need to get someone from Maxxis on the show, because I think that would probably be an interesting story if somebody would be like fully transparent on how all that stuff happened. Because essentially my understanding is Maxxis is really just the American arm of CST, Changshan Tire. And they decided, hey, let's like market stuff. Let's make stuff that maybe the Western world understands and embraces a lot more. And they built that brand. And I would be very interested to know who was behind that. Because like they clearly did a really good job. That's why I'm curious.
And I don't know, like you say Maxxis is asleep at the wheel, but they're the only company that their tires have been showing up on all the 32-inch new shit that's coming out.
Yeah, and Maxxis invested the money into building the casings for 32s.
I mean, maybe they were asleep at the wheel and they like, you know, when they slumped over, they hit the tire stretcher thing and they got some 32s.
When you say they're asleep at the wheel, what I understand you said tread compounds, but when you say tire, like tread design, what's missing? Like they
know.
Just released the new Dissector 2.
Yeah,
they have the Forecaster, which is fairly new.
Yeah.
The Aspen ST, which is, I mean, it's semi vaporware, but I would say for good reason. Not very many people need an Aspen ST. So
I want them to do. They need to do like a DHF 2.5 or something. I don't know.
What would they? Why do they need to change the DHF? The DHF is what it is. It's a tire that is a faster rolling knob tire without intermediate knobs. Oh, you want intermediate knobs? You buy an Assegai. Oh, you want a DHR with more intermediate knobs? You buy an Aggressor. Like, I think they've got it fucking covered.
I don't know.
And
maybe
to give you, and I've been trying to say this for like 20 minutes now. The reason that I'm not going to run Vittoria tires is our shop needs someone that is very on the Maxxis train. And a couple of the service guys are very hard and they struggle to not talk well about Vittoria without talking poorly about Maxxis. And I'm like, cool, you like Mezcals. Have you tried a Recon? Oh, no, Maxxis sucks. Well, no, fucking Recon slap. So until you've ridden one, shut up. And I'm not saying a Mezcal's bad. I am going to say, though, if I'm going to pay $100 for a tire, and those in listener land, if you're like, oh, but you don't pay $100 for the tire because you work at a shop, shut the fuck up. If it's a $100 tire, it's still an expensive-ass tire for me. And Vittoria and Maxxis cost the same for you and me. You know, they both cost the same. If you're buying them, they both cost the same. If I'm buying them, they don't cost us the same, but they each cost us a lot of money. I have the ability to fuck around and try Specialized tires because it's like a $65 or $70 retail tire. If I'm going to spend $100, I'm going to buy a tire that I absolutely know is going to work. And Maxxis does that for me. And the other part of that is I'm a vain bitch. There's no other way to put it. And I refuse to ride a front and rear tire from different manufacturers. So because I have a ton of Maxxis tires, I really struggle to buy a Vittoria because if I'm like, oh, I want to put my Recon on the rear, put my Aspen on the hook and run a Dissector up front. Well, then I have to buy a Dissector. If I'm in the Vittoria world, I have to buy a tire every time I want to do that. Right now I have Maxxis on everything and I could steal a tire over here and stick it over there if I really needed to, and my brain would not explode because the hot patches match on both tires.
By the way, so, you can get Maxxis Ardents right now on AliExpress.
For like a dollar.
So I wonder if those old molds rolled out the back door.
I don't care. Yeah. And I thought Kenny would be stoked that I was said Fast Tracks, and he was just like, oh, Flex Light. No one knows what that is.
It yeah, you know, the Fast Track has gone downhill, unfortunately.
It goes uphill, too.
I think the tread design from, what, two or three generations ago, something like that, that was a really good one. I think the redesign
when
that
I was
happened
ride in Tour Divide in 2020.
The redesign that happened in, like, when was that? 18, 19, 20, somewhere in that ballpark. That one was mediocre at best. It was okay. And I think they have even, like, a new one. I don't know. I don't ride fast tracks anymore. It is, that's pretty ridiculous for a 170, 180 bike. And you got to remember, I came from XC World and came out here. So for the first 2 years, I was still in, like, XC mode of thinking you needed the fastest rolling tires in the world. And they do good in a lot of situations, without a doubt. As long as you don't have anything deep and as long as you're riding super rocky stuff with, like, smoothish rock, hell, a cross-country tire is better than a big, beefy enduro tire.
Should we roll on into what Kenny's been doing this week?
It's not shit. I got nothing.
You want me to talk about what I've been doing this week?
Sure.
So I think I mentioned that I was having possible hormone problems. I don't remember totally because one of the things I've been having problems with is my brain. So I decided to go to, I'll start from the beginning. I got a new psychiatrist. You all know I have ADHD. And my symptoms were getting getting a lot worse and not being controlled by my medication. And I know that a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm not productive. And they're talking about, like, I can't work or, you know, do things that involve, like, making an income, working for someone else. I literally couldn't, like, function. Like, spacing out while I'm driving, walking into a room and not knowing why I'm there, that kind of thing, like, severe problems with, like, short-term memory. So I got a new psychiatrist because my old one was giving me, like, super RFK vibes and basically lied to me about, like, the dosage of medication I could take. Not basically. She did. Like, she flat out told me, like, you're close to the maximum dosage of medication. And it turns out that the maximum dosage is more than double what I was taking, that she said I was close to the maximum. So I got a new psychiatrist that specialized in women with ADHD. And she suggested that I look into hormone replacement therapy. And so I was kind of debating, should I go to, and this is important for anyone who is a person around the age of 40 and has ovaries that produce hormones. If you are one of those people or you have one of those people in your life and they start having just random health problems and brain problems, it's a good idea to look into that because there can be a lot of shit that's related to your hormones that you can experience that don't make necessarily seem like they're related to hormones. So I went in and they did like a full blood test. And it turns out that a lot of my shit is real fucked up. I have what's called Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune problem where your body decides that your thyroid is something that needs to be destroyed. And so my thyroid hormones were way off, even though I've been on thyroid medication for about a year now. That was way off. Like, the dose that I was taking wasn't nearly high enough. And then, like, the general hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Women do produce testosterone. I had stopped. So I had, like, no testosterone at all, which is actually very important for women for a lot of reasons, like recovery, just general well-being. And, so those things were all pretty fucked up. And so yesterday, I went into the doctor and she was really like, she was kind of going through all my stuff and she got to like the last thing, which was like vitamin D. And it was like half of what normal would be or less than that even. I don't even remember. It was so low that she just kind of like looked at it and she's like, I don't know how you're sitting here and talking to me and functioning on a day-to-day basis right now. I'm like, well, I'm really not. So I'm going to start hormone therapy and some supplements and stuff, and hopefully I'll feel better in the next, in the upcoming weeks. But I had a couple of hormone pellets implanted into my right butt cheek, which was, it's a little sore, but not as bad as I thought it would be. And yeah, hopefully stuff starts to get better. So Troy, when you change your patron name, what's wrong with Andrea this week? It's fucking hormones. It's all of them. That's what's wrong with Andrea this week.
Getting that clam and brain all fixed up.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine who's also around my age and on hormone replacement therapy. And like, we were kind of joking around, like, I remember vaguely back in like sixth grade, there was like a special class that only the girls went to in sixth grade, and the boys had like their own class. And they were like, so there's a, in a year, the next year or two, you're going to start bleeding out of this hole in your body that you may or may not know exists yet. But that's going to start bleeding once a month. And then when you're 50, it's going to stop. And that's like the education. That's all of the education that you get about women's health and hormones for your entire life. And hopefully that's going to change, or it is changing. But yeah, so if you're around the age of 40, get that shit checked. If you have weird stuff start happening and you just start suddenly feeling like you're just declining in all aspects of your body, get that checked out. Or if you know, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone who's experiencing that, first of all, be very patient. Be very tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going through some shit. Some pretty awful shit.
Learn where the fire extinguishers are.
I was describing to my doctor, she was like, have you had hot flashes? I'm like, no, I don't think so. But occasionally my face, and just my face, no other part of my body, will feel like the skin is about to melt off, and I turn bright red, and the only way to make it stop is to put, like, something frozen on my face. She's like, yeah, that's a hot flash. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. But, yeah, so that's what I'm doing right now, and hopefully I'll feel like doing other stuff besides icing my face and taking a lot of pain medication and wondering why I can't sleep and I'm always tired.
Would this apply to any of my guy friends? Would that explain only if they why they act the way they do sometimes?
Only if they have ovaries.
Mm. All right. Well, they got something else going on. I'll figure it out.
I mean, or guys can have hormonal changes too.
If they've lost a testicle, you might look into that.
Yeah. I mean, I told Matt he should go to this place because basically, like, the cool thing is, so I didn't know this. If you ever get a blood test for something and they have like a, what your value is, and then they give you a range of like what's normal. That normal level, like that range, is based on an average of blood tests from the previous year. And if you think about it, the only reason why you would go and get a blood test is if something was wrong. So like that average range is based on people that aren't necessarily healthy. So this doctor that I saw, what she has done, like, for her practice, is she went and looked at values, research values, like peer-reviewed research of healthy, like, 20 to 30-year-olds who had the same blood tests done. And that's what she bases her normal ranges off of. So, like, if it says, you know,
I find it hard to believe that modern medicine doesn't know what normal blood values are.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up, really. Like, once you really start looking at it, it's a, like, low normal for a lot of things is really just not normal. Like, you're not going to feel good. Like, so, like, my thyroid values are, like, low normal, but because they've just, like, the thing that they look at is thyroid stimulating hormone, which is what your brain releases to tell your thyroid, hey, make the thyroid juice. You know, mine is low normal. And she's like, no, like, even though she's like, it's increased, even though you're taking medication, it's increased from 1 to 3 of whatever the, I don't remember what the unit of measurement is. It's increased from 1 to 3 over the past year, even though you're taking medication. And then this other test that we looked at for a chemical that your body would produce to destroy your thyroid, basically, that is like way out of range. Like that's high. So you obviously have a problem. If we didn't test for that, you know, if you just went to the doctor and had your thyroid value tested, they'd be like, oh, no, you're good. But really, I'm not good. So, yeah, that's, and like, estrogen is the hormone that would, if it's low, it's going to give you hot flashes. And mine was in like the low normal range. And she's like, well, the fact that you're having hot flashes, even though it's not your full body, and the fact that, you know, you're having these problems says that you need to supplement that because it fluctuates a lot And when it's on like the downswing of its fluctuation, you don't have enough and you're having hot flashes. So that's, yeah. So, I mean, I would definitely recommend if you have the means for it, go to like a specialist, because just your standard doctor is not necessarily going to look at the normal healthy person range. They're just going to be looking at that like average of people who weren't necessarily doing great and went and had their blood tested. So that's my PSA for the week. And on a lighter note, Kenny, have you ever heard of a ringtail cat?
That sounds familiar.
So it's like this little animal, like the body of it is kind of like, I don't know, ferret shaped. It's kind of long and pointy, but it has a long striped tail like a raccoon. I had one of those. I have some traps out right now. And yeah, I had one of those that like hung out and like sniffed around my trap for a little while, night before last. So that's kind of cool.
And why was that? Why was that question aimed at me?
I don't know. I have knows about them because okay. It's like a thing. It's an animal that not a lot of, I hadn't heard about them until I moved to Colorado. Really, just till we moved to this area. Like I had to look up what it was. I heard someone talk about one, and I'm like, I have no idea what that is.
There's a lot of random ass animals. What the fuck's an ocelot?
It's a type of cat.
It's Carol's cat in Archer. It's Babu.
That random animal name just came to mind.
Yeah, so if you never heard of a ringtail cat, look it up. They look cool.
Also, something cool. If you have any desire to have a random fact, you're going to get one. On the neighborhood watch signs, there's the little bad guy in the pointy hat, kind of like the spy versus spy looking dude from Mad TV.
Sure.
His name is Boris the Burglar.
Hmm.
Ain't that some shit?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, should we move to new shit? We have like some pretty good listener questions. We didn't get to them last week.
Yeah. What if we just forego new shit? Surely there's not anything that cool to talk about, right? Because I vote, unless there's something incredibly compelling to talk about, that we just skip it.
There's not.
Yeah. Let's just do listener questions because we've kind of ignored some listener questions.
If we have time, we'll go back to new shit. And if
we
not,
won't.
Just do new shit next week. I'm just going to start with this one since I have it open and we talked about it a little bit before the show. From Dominic. Dominic says, "Hi, JRA crew. First of all, the usual, I love the show and have been listening since the MTB radio times. I love your honest opinions, and that is why I'm writing you again. Last time was when I wanted to purchase my Atherton, which I did thanks to Andrea's input on the DWC link. And it was the best bike decision I made. I would like to have your honest thoughts on a subject. I recently bought half of a bike shop 3 months ago and would like your input on owning and working in a bike shop. What are things to look out for? What are some of the customer complaints you can't avoid? And just general advice on owning and operating a bike shop." And then he gives us some background information. He says you don't have to read it on air. We've read the background information. So what do you guys think? What would be your advice to Dominic and his half of a bike shop?
I guess I'll just start going. In general, don't want to bum you out. Retail's hard. It just is. And with that said, though, there's no reason you can't be successful. And you might have a different definition of what success is, but as long as you're happy and you have a reasonable amount of income and you have a viable business and maybe you can employ some people, that's great. Like, that's perfectly sustainable. You don't need to be the biggest bike shop with the baddest ass website and try to take over the world to be successful. So retail is hard. There is a lot of competition. There are all kinds of channels that people can buy stuff on that, you know, may be legitimate and not legitimate. And you got to, you know, compete with all that stuff. I'm sure you're fully aware of all that. So just general advice is, it sounds like from your description of the stuff that we won't read on air, that you are probably a smart person based on your background. So just have a probably general business sense, understand what a P&L might be, for example, and just understand how to make a business work from a dollars and cents standpoint. And yeah, could you fake it by just being smart and not even having necessarily super proper accounting? You could probably get away with it by just making intelligent decisions and the back end will probably work out. But yeah, I think long term, it makes a lot of sense to have tidy bookkeeping and just make sure stuff makes sense. Don't get in over your head. Don't, you know, that's how you get behind on vendors and all that kind of stuff. I see it happen all the time with smaller bike shops. So just be careful. But with all that said, none of it, most of it will work out if you just have good customer service. It's really that simple. Be honest with people and do stuff quickly, do it well, and have really good communication. And just be a good shop. And everything else generally will just kind of work out. You don't need to do any awesome rocket science in the background to make it work. Yeah, I know that's not like super specific advice, but that's all I got. I'm sure I'll think about other stuff as Matt and Andrea give their input.
I do like this one thing. And it's stuff that he said don't read on air. I am going to read this because it's just good. He says, our business style is a very honest one where we tell customers exactly how it is. And we don't sell them extra on repairs if they don't really need it. And I think that's really how you build a lot of trust with customers. Like if they come in and they're like, I want a tune-up. And your tune-up is, I know you're in you're in euros because you're not in America.
Yeah, you've got a different symbol in front of your money. So I don't know the chicken nugget conversion rate.
No, it's about 1-to-1. Don't be scared.
You know, if they say, my bike needs a tune-up, and you take a look at their bike, and, you know, let's say your tune-up is 200 euros. I don't know. And really all they need is like a derailleur adjustment, which is 30 euros. Just do the derailleur. Like, if you can get them out the door cheaper, absolutely do that every time, because then when they come back and they're like, this thing's not quite right, and, you know, this thing's not quite right, and I don't really know what's wrong, and when you tell them that their repair is going to be 600 euros, because that other time when they were going to spend more that you only did a little bit and charged them less and they were happy and it fixed their bike, then when you say, well, it's going to cost a lot more this time, they're going to trust you. You know, I think that's a big thing. You know, and some people being just blunt and honest with them, like some people aren't going to like that. And those are the people you don't necessarily need as customers.
No, I'm going to interject there because there's two parts of that that I don't disagree with, but I want to clarify. Actually, I'm just going to, you've got the gist of it, but I want to give a different scenario. I fucking hate tune-ups. Tune-ups are the worst.
They are really dumb. In this day and age, they are fucking dumb.
Tune-ups are for rim brake road bikes. That's it. If your bike has any moving suspension parts, dropper post, rear shock, front shock, tune-up is not what that bike needs. If it has hydraulic brakes, it doesn't need a tune-up. If it has disc brakes, it doesn't need a tune-up. If it's not a rim brake 2x10, 2x11 bicycle, it does not need a tune-up. What it needs, and it's not your fault. This is the education aspect that's going to be really important. A customer comes in because they believe they need a tune-up, and they believe they need a tune-up because they've been habituated that you need to get you drag your bicycle out, it needs a tune-up. You rode it for a year, or, you know, it's been in the garage for 3 years, it needs a tune-up. You've been riding it all season, it needs a tune-up. It probably doesn't need a tune-up. It probably needs X, Y, and Z, X, Y, Z, in your parlance, maybe.
Nope, that's only in Australia.
Well, maybe they're in Australia. Who knows? They might branch out. But if it just needs a derailleur adjust, that's fine. But the next part of that is the customer came in with a story to tell you, and their story was, I need a tune-up. Your next question is going to be the, what's been going on with the bike? Oh, you haven't ridden it lately. Okay, that's going to give me, I just touched my forehead and pointed up. Oh, okay, you haven't ridden this bike much lately. Great. Let's look it over. You know, everything seems to be working well. I don't think it needs much of a tune-up, but these tires are starting to show some dry rot. This rear tire is pretty worn out. These grips are gooey, or the bar tape is sort of dry rotted and just doesn't feel good underhand anymore. That customer came in asking for a tune-up because in their minds, and this is why I hate tune-ups, I want you to make my bike perfect. That's what someone says when they say, I want a tune-up. It's your job as a business owner, to lead from the front, and you need to ask that customer what their expectations are, what their needs are. And in some cases, it's a, you know, at our shop, that would be the rear derailleur hanger got bent in a bike rack, so it's not shifting well. You don't really need a tune-up. Your brake pads look good. Your chain measures well. Everything looks great, but your hanger needs to be aligned. That's like $25. That'll get your shifting all squared away. And it looks like your grips are pretty worn out. You know, you don't have to get new grips today, but we can get you set up for about $25. You know, our tune-ups run $100. Less than a tune-up, you can get a hanger alignment, some new grips.
I don't
get
even
you
think
rolling tomorrow.
It's not even about... I agree. I don't like tune-ups. I think in today's bike world, they don't really apply. And everything that Matt said is like 100% nail on the head. Like, that's all good stuff. You can, though, from a business standpoint, you sell them, don't sell them stuff they don't need. In this case, they probably don't need a tune-up, but maybe they need, it could very easily be $100 or $150 worth of tires, and they need some grips, and they need a chain, but, you know, rings and cassettes still look good. And they told you that they've had the bike for 3 years, they ride it a ton, and they've never done wipers on their suspension, right? So, like, you can cherry pick all this stuff, and you're selling them stuff, and you can, it's okay to upsell people on stuff they actually need or preventative maintenance they've not done, but just doing a blind blanket tune-up is absolutely the wrong way of doing it. And if you tell people all the stuff that they need, you are going to end up with someone who maybe came in for $100 or $200 tune-up and leave with a $300 bill, and it was all stuff they need. And vice versa, you're going to have someone come in that wanted a $200 tune-up and was expecting to pay $200, and you make their bike perfect for $50.
And you're hitting the nail on the head. The next step of that is forecasting. I'm not talking about inventory forecasting within your shop, because that's something you need to work on as well, and I'm going to touch on that in a moment. But forecasting for the rider. So you're checking the bike over, you're measuring rotors, because all rotors tell you their maximum or their starting and finishing thickness. Measure a pair of digital calipers will make your shop more money than any other $15 tool you can buy on Amazon, because you can measure the rotor. And this is where that forecasting comes in. I like to ask people what's coming for them as a rider. Do they want to come back in, you know, let's say a rotor starts at 185 and it ends at 155. That's SRAM. 1815 for Shimano. They're at 158. You know, you're going to need pads and rotors in the not too distant future. You could let's say it's Shimano and it's at 158. You know, 0.08 millimeters doesn't sound like a lot, but you only get to use 0.3 total. You know, you've used 0.22. So, you know, you've got about however much you've ridden the bike since the last time you put a rotor on, you've got about 20 to 30% more of that left. Do you want to come back and see us again this year, or do you want us to just go ahead and take care of that? And that, because the thing that Andrea read that was in the don't read, but it was a very little snippet. What they don't really need, but that's not your decision to make. If a customer wants a tune-up, by God, they get a tune-up. If you're forecasting for that customer, and this might not apply to your riders, but, oh, I've got a couple of big trips this spring where I'm going to go to Moab, I'm going down to Arizona, and I just really like to get my bike stuff done here. Let's go ahead and do pads and rotors just so I know that it's good until I'm back in town for a while, you know, midsummer. That's something and in that forecasting, one rider is going to tell you, let's go ahead and do it. I just want to come in. I want to swipe my cart. I want my bike to be good for a while. Another customer, you're planting that seed of like, hey, you only need a hanger alignment today. Your brake pads look good, but I just want to let you know these do wear. Oh, the next time you get pads, you're going to need a rotor. And sometimes they're like, oh, do we need to do that today? And they look a little panicked. You're like, nope. I just don't want you to be surprised. Rotors run $50 to $60. And then, you know, when the brake starts to feel a little weak and doesn't have the stopping power that it did before, it's probably not a bleed issue. We will bleed it to, you know, do fresh fluid, but it's going to need pads and rotors when you have a brake problem. And that forecasting, some people are going to say do it. They don't want, and it's not that they don't want to see you again. They just want to be riding their bike. They just don't want to see you soon. Some folks need to stretch it out financially, or they just are a little more miserly. They're like, you know, I'm going to run it while I can, but I'll come get it taken care of when it needs to be taken care of. And that rapport, or that dialogue, that conversation back and forth of like, I just don't want you to be surprised in the future. And let's say, you know, but back to that, don't really need it. Hey, it's the rainy season. Your drivetrain's pretty, like they come in, hey, I need a new chain. Hey, your train's really worn out on this commuter bike. You ride it every day. It's been in the rain. It's been in the snow. Shit, it's January. It's going to be a lot of rain and snow. If we change just the chain, this shit's not going to mesh well together. It's not going to work well. It's all worn together. Do you want to come in the spring and just have us do it all at once? You're telling that customer, no, you can't buy a chain because you're going to be mad at me that your bike rides like hell after this. And you're giving them the option of, do you want to run it into the ground? Do you want to make it right today? And I'm just joking, but 50-50, you know, is it going to sell it that day? Maybe not. But when they come in and they're like, yeah, I need a chain. I'm like, yeah, dude, told you last time, your shit's hosed. You can't put just a chain on this. You got to do it all. And they're like, oh, yeah, right. I forgot. Let's do it all. And I really like that as a service writer. I like talking to the customer. Always, I want. And this comes into forecasting. I'm going to talk about this from a rider perspective to a business perspective now. When you're forecasting for the rider, you need to forecast what needs to happen today, what could happen today, and what needs to happen in the future. And then when you're doing that, you need to forecast them a price. I'm going to keep using the word forecasting because I think it is really going to drive this home. When you scan that into your system, I'm assuming you're on a computerized system where you scan it into a work order, it's no longer an inventory. That tells your buyer that you just sold that item. And then that tells a number of systems a number of things. If you have minimum reorder set up in your system, you know that you need to reorder a GX chain for argument's sake. But if you don't scan it into the work order, guess what? Six people are going to walk in just, oh man, I snapped my chain. And I'm going to Whistler. Oh, man, I'm going to Moab, and I want to take a spare chain. And you're going to sell all your chains, and then when you're ready to do that repair, you don't have a chain for that bike. But you've already told Jimmy that you're putting a chain on his bike, and now you're hosed. So when you scan that item into the work order, number one, it removes it from your physical inventory, and hopefully that is moved away from retail product in your store and squirreled away in a little ABC bin. You know, we have six or eight bins broken down by the alphabet, and things get blue masking tape together with the customer's name written on the outside.
Yeah, by the way, that's an important one just from a workflow standpoint. Always, always, mm-hmm. always take the time on the front end to do a couple things. Check the bike in properly. Look the mm-hmm. bike over properly with the customer. Spend the 5-10 minutes. Go over all the stuff mm-hmm. that it needs or doesn't need. And mm-hmm. stop and take the time to set aside all those parts that thing needs that you all have agreed upon, the chain, the cassette, mm-hmm. the whatever, the fork seals. Find all that mm-hmm. stuff right then and there and put it with the bike immediately, or put it in those bins where no one else can touch it, because that's really bad when you commit a bike to a service and then someone sells the last set of seals out from under you or whatever, and then you're hosed. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a part you need to special order, put it on the ticket right now so that you know that evening mm-hmm. or whenever to special order that part. Because it's so mm-hmm. easy to get lazy and be like, oh, well, I'll do it later. Oh, we have a bunch of those chains, or it's fine. Stop. Mm-hmm. Put that stuff aside with the bike immediately.
Yep.
Yeah. And I want to like...
Well, hold on. I'm almost done with this. Because then you can look at Jimmy, Sally, whoever, and say, okay, this is going to be $275. And my last part, and I'll let Andrea talk, but like Kenny just said, what Kenny missed is then when, you know, Johan or Jimmy's a customer, so, you know, Bob, Dick, Janie, whoever is going to work on that bike, all they have to do is grab that pile of shit, look at it, look at the work order, and go, cool, I'm putting a drivetrain and two rotors, two brake pads on this bike. Sick. And that's good. You could tell the customer this is going to be X amount of dollars, and then you ask the customer. If we run into something, and I like 275, it's it rings up 272.74 with tax. And I'm like, hey, it's 275. And I like pointed the screen ish. You know, I like to be kind of silly and, you know, banter a little. If it's not over 310 or 300, 315, do you want us to give you a call? Like if it needs a cable or some other little thing, do you want us to just knock it out or give you a call? And customers will often give you a small allowance if you ask for it. And then some customers are like, I don't care, make it right. And that does two things. It helps you understand your customer better, but it also, when you're writing that work order, you need to tell the story to the service writer, service advisor needs to write a work order that condenses, consolidates, and helps the person performing the service understand the customer's expectations. And when you put that dollar allowance in, it empowers them to not break stride. Like, man, you missed that this, you know,
the derailleur, the brake housing or something has a crack in it.
Yeah, like mechanical brake housing is, you know, worn through where it's been rubbing on a front rack. Oh, we've got a little extra to play with. I can just throw this on while I'm putting the pads and rotor on. I don't need to call Jimmy or Sally. I can just roll forward and go on with it. And all those things are so important because it makes everyone's life better. It makes your customer feel, because when you spend that 5 to 15 minutes at check-in with them, the customer feels like you've really stopped your workflow in order to improve your later workflow, which is important for you. But they got like a lot of one-on-one time with you. They really understand that you invested time into them on the front end. You care about the bike. You care about their riding experience. And you share that information through the work order so the service tech understands the customer and rider needs and potentially has a little bit of extra to just work efficiently and make the bike right. And then when you come to pick the bike up, the bike is great. There's no price surprises. Everything works well.
Yeah. And that's basically what Matt spent a long time saying. And what I just want to say is like a big, really important thing, because you did mention that the shop does make a lot of income off of, a lot of its income comes from service and parts. Service riding is your, if that's a big part of your shop's income, service riding is going to, good service riding is going to make you more money. And it's going to make your customers happy because of all the reasons Matt just said. So number one, like service riding, like you should never have just a work order. Unless the customer, for whatever reason, is like, I have to just leave my bike here and I have to go right now because I have to pick my kids up. Just call me once you know what I need. Other than that, you should never have a $0 work order in your system. So like no work order should ever just be like a bike and a customer name and be like, brakes feel weird. And that's it. Like you should have very clear and concise notes for your mechanic. Customers should have their expectations of, you know, how the bike's going to work. If they refuse something that they need, that should be in the notes so your mechanic doesn't look at it and be like, what? This one part is just fucked. And you're like, yeah, they didn't want to fix it. They don't have to like call the customer and be like, yo, you need to fix this. And the customer's like, yeah, I said I didn't want to fix that.
And I have a couple of great, so when you're writing a work order, everything that you type into your system is something that should be appropriate to read back to your customer in front of any other customer. If you have a great rapport with this customer and they're like, hey man, I fucked up my derailleur, you don't write in the work order, customer fucked up their derailleur, because that's not appropriate.
No, that's good stuff. And we have that crop up from time to time. We have a lot of shops with a lot of employees. People want to get, you know, smart and snarky and all that stuff, and it never ever leads anywhere good. Like, yeah, be professional. Everything you do, everything you write down 100% should be capable of being customer facing, without a doubt.
Yep. And with that though, I'm going to give you three phrases that makes your service technician's life better. Customer states, when I grab my front brake, the rear shifter doesn't work. That's fucking insane. That doesn't happen. Unless your brake cable and your shift cable have like intertwined in this unholy snake orgy of mating ritual. If you've never seen a snake mating ritual, it's just like a pile of snakes all getting weird. But unless that happened, that's never going to happen. But you need to write that down, because then when the customer comes to pick their bike up, yeah, it says here you were having some issues where when you squeezed the front brake, the rear shifting got weird. It looks like X, Y, and Z was the issue, right? Customer states, front brake only makes noise when climbing slowly. That's a good note. Let's go out and ride it slowly. Oh, the front brake is barely rubbing when you're going slow, and you can hear it because the tire or trail road noise is not happening. Customer requests. Hey, I just went to yada, yada, yada. I did a bunch of descending. I want new pads and rotors. Well, they measure fine. Well, I want new pads and rotors. Fucking sell them to me. Customer requests new brake pads and rotors. We're not doing this because we think it needs to be done. This is what the customer requested. And then customer declines. Drivetrain measures 2.0 on a like you put a chain checker in there and it rattles back and forth. Customer declines drivetrain. Not interested in replacing it this time. Customer declines rear cord showing on rear tire. Customer declines at this time. Customer comes back a month later bitching, I just had a tune-up done, and now I got a flat tire. Oh, it looks like you declined us to install a rear tire when you were in a month ago, and the cords were already showing on this one. So, customer states, customer declines, customer requests. That tells a story to your service technician that then leaves a record of what was talked about, why we are or are not doing something to this bicycle, and then if they do or do not bitch, you know why.
Yeah, and just the last thing, if you find a good mechanic, just even if they're not super experienced, but they're just someone who's very mechanically inclined, picks up on stuff, pay them as much as you feasibly can, like, so that they can exist on their bike shop job, and treat them well. Take them seriously. Make sure that they have a good workspace. Make sure that they have the tools that they need. Make sure they're getting paid enough that they can exist. Take care of that person, because it is really, I don't know what it's like where you are, but everywhere I've ever been, a good mechanic is just that cliche. They are worth their weight in gold. So make sure that you do everything that you can. Because if you are paying shit, or if you treat them like shit, they are actively looking for a new job.
Every day.
Every day. They are just looking. They're looking at classifieds. They're looking at help wanted signs on store windows of fucking coffee shops and shit. Like, they will leave in a heartbeat if you treat them like shit and don't pay them right. So make sure that you do not do that.
And to move, I know we were pretty service heavy here, but I want to talk about some bike shop things. Don't lose focus. Like, I work in a mountain bike secret destination. I think that's the best way to put it. Or let's call it a regional destination. There's a lot of people within 3 to 4 hours, or let's call it an hour and a half to 4 hours, that come see us a few times a year. You know, we're not a destination like Moab or New Zealand, a big bucket list thing, but for those that can make a drive over after work, camp ride, drive home, they come and see us, and we're a mountain bike zone. And the last thing we need to do is bring in 10 different road tires, because that's not our core competency. And I put this that way because if you bring in, let's just say, like, yes, we have road tires. We have some nice specialized road tires, and we have some what I would call rammer tires. They're, hey, this is my old road bike I ride around town, and we've got, like, Vittoria Rubinos for that, right? But don't lose sight of what you're good at. I mean, of course, you got to test some edge cases occasionally, or follow trends. You know, if suddenly everyone starts bringing in road bikes, then yeah, you got to get road bike parts. But don't just buy a bunch of road parts because you think it'll bring the road riders in. Don't be a mountain bike shop and have a bunch of road tires on the wall, like 10 different SKUs, two of each. You got 20 SKUs. You know, they're nice road tires. So we've got 20 items. They're $75 retail a piece. That's $1,500 in retail. Or we could have 50 GX chains. which are we more likely to sell? Well, we don't need 50 GX chains at once. We could have 10 GX chains, and then we could have 20 sets of brake pads, 10 rotors, yada, 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 right? But when we have those mountain bike parts in stock, I can sell them. I can install them. There's no special order. They can come pick their bike up, give us money, and then we can use that money to pay our employees and buy more shit that we need that we regularly sell. So, you know, if you're new to owning a bike shop, don't get a wild hair and order in a Pinarello to sit on the floor because you think that someone might buy a nice road bike from you. Guaranteed it's not the right size, and they're going to want Campy instead of Red, or they're going to want Red instead of Durace. You're never going to get it right on those one-offs. Yeah. So, you know, don't lose sight of what is your core competency and double down and do really well on that so you can, when Jimmy walks in and is like, hey, I know y'all are more of a mountain bike shop, but I really like you guys. Can you order me a Tarmac SL8 or an Athos 2? Yeah, man, we're a Specialized dealer. We can get it. We're an S-Works dealer. We can get you the S-Works one. You know, we don't stock them because, and I usually point at the mountains and the trails, you know, like we do a lot of outside stuff at our shop. We got a little courtyard between two different buildings. I'm like, yeah, we don't really stock in Tarmac SLA because, you know, mountain bike stuff, but yeah, we can get one. That's no problem. And then you go and you take their deposit and you sell them that $14,000 road bike. That's dope. But don't lose sight of the fact that you're a mountain bike shop and start stocking road bikes because one dude bought a Tarmac.
And I, just to kind of like wrap it up with customers, treat your, you know, your like your customer that has like the 20-year-old commuter that they ride every single day and they spend what they need to on it. But, you know, their, let's say their total sales for a year is $150. Treat that person with just as much respect and enthusiasm as you do the person that has an S-Works mountain bike and then also wants to order an S-Works road bike. Like, those
customers, totally.
I mean, yeah, you're making more money off of one than the other, but, like, you know, treat every customer that walks in the door, you know, until they, I don't know, say something like racist or something. Like, if they're just a shitty person, yeah, like, do whatever. But, you know, in general, treat every single person that walks in the door as a human that just wants to be respected and listened to when they bring their bike in a bike shop or when they come into a bike shop to purchase a bike or whatever it might be.
I have one other thing to talk to you about on service stuff. Raise your prices. And the reason I say that is, well, there's two ways you can raise your prices. You can add SKUs, which I think you should, and you can raise the cost of each individual SKU. If you're selling someone brake pads, you're going to bleed that brake, so they're paying for a brake bleed. So they've now got two SKUs. They have those SRAM brake pads. They have a brake bleed with pad install. Brake bleed and brake bleed with pad install is the same retail price, but is different SKUs in our system, because when I push the button that says brake bleed with pad install, I have done part of the storytelling with one click. I don't have to write bleed brake with new pads. I can write, you know, brake bleed, new pads, yada, yada, yada. And then the work order reinforces that we are installing the pads with that line item. Also, in the future, you might have a situation where someone bought brake pads and had a brake bleed done, but they did not have you install those pads. Those more detailed SKUs help with that. But a $5 SKU for installing a rotor, yes, that is trivial, but it's more time. Installing a rotor, it's not free time for your technician. It's not free to the customer.
I think that's getting a little bit into the detail and weeds. I think that's covered by just good service writing.
Well, but then the last thing that I'm of this is, when you raise your prices, if something used to be $10 and now it's $12, someone's going to complain. But if you did 1,000 tire installs last year and you raised the price from $10 to $12, you just made $2,000 more. Yeah, Matt, but some people aren't going to pay that. Oh, okay. So 10 less people got a tire install. So now you did 990 at 12 instead of 1,000 at 10. You still made more money. And it doesn't matter if it's $10 or $12. There's some people, if the price is a quarter, they're going to want it for 15 cents. If it's 15 cents, they're going to want it for a dime. If it's a dime, they're going to want it for a nickel. If it's free, they're going to want you to give them a handy with Arby's sauce behind the dumpster. Like, you can't please everyone. And generally speaking, as long as you're producing quality work, a little bit higher cost is going to be absorbed in a, you know, I'm trying to think of the right word here, not accommodated, accepted by your rider base.
Generally speaking, if somebody doesn't mention that they think you're whatever labor you're talking about, if they say you should have one or two people per month, let's say, oh, wow, that's expensive. If you don't have someone saying that ever, your prices are probably too low. That's a random barometer that you can use, but I think it's pretty true.
Right. We've been recording a long time, and I think we answered this question very thoroughly.
Yeah, we only answered one question. That's fine.
That's okay. That was a good question, though, and I think, I mean, it gives a lot of people that don't own bike shops a little peek behind the curtain of, you know, like, how we think on our end.
I'm going to say other general stuff real quick. I know we've been talking about this forever, but just big picture, and you can definitely disagree with me, but what I've seen, I've worked in a decent number of bike shops and some pretty high volume ones and some pretty successful ones. It is very difficult to run a service only or a service focused bike shop. It just is. Is it possible to do it? Yes. Is it going to work in the long term? Probably not. If you look at any big successful bike shops, you know, I don't know, like an Eric's Bikes or whatever, these huge multi-location shops. And I'm not saying you have to be gigantic to be successful, but just generally speaking, you have to sell bikes. Selling bikes is very important, and don't overlook selling bikes. And that's where it gets complicated, because the how you sell a bike is different than it used to be. It's all omni-channel now. And maybe you don't necessarily have to carry a bunch of inventory, but just know that in the back of your head, you need to sell bikes. So if you're not going to stock a lot of bikes, you better embrace omni-channel, and you better get signed up with every single vendor you have to do whatever click and ship style fulfillment that they have, where you might not have to actually front the bill for the bike, but it just shows up at your place and you get a reduced margin. Just keep that in mind. Selling bikes, in my opinion, is extremely important as a bike shop.
It is important. And as a technician, just to piggyback on what Kenny said, there's nothing more profitable I can do with my time than build a bicycle. Because if there's a bicycle in a box that, let's say it's sold and it was special ordered and it arrives today, just looking at pure profit, there is nothing more profitable I can do as a mechanic than assemble that bicycle, because nothing can touch the profit per hour that putting a bike together and calling that customer that it's ready so they can come pick it up can offer.
Yep, that's correct.
All right. Good information there. So we'll just go ahead and read patrons and shut it down. Is that okay with you guys?
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right. So our patrons at $10 a month or more, we have Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash.
That's not spelled right.
Which one?
Reynolds.
Oh, yeah, it's wrong. Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, spelled correctly, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Free Gabe Horn, Cam Irish One, Zach, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, My Name is Clayton, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Carmenin Cider, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans, Matt's Church Bell, Oliver, Close Off, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Tom P, Butt Stuff, Chat GPT at $11.11 per month, Candace Cokefit, I guess.
Candace Cockfit.
Oh, okay. I was reading too literally. All right. At 14 Australian, we have Patamillan Disco Ball, Dean at 1650 Australian, and at $20 a month, we have Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, at 26.06 per month, Pornographic Meat Rice, brought to you by Only Yams.
Jeez.
Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. At Fitty.
Yeah.
We have some wonderful patrons. All right. Well, you guys ready to wrap it up and shut it down?
Shut it down. Oh, yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
My fingers smell like the inside of a squirrel.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your pads.